Well, I know that since we started the resumption of these midweek drive shows and midweek drive morning editions a few weeks ago now, actually at the start of June, there's been one huge absence, and it has been pointed out. How can the shows ever be regarded as being ever complete before you can welcome back the awesomely talented Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar? She's back with us now. Gabriella, how are you?
Thank you. That was really nice. I'm good. I'm working from home still, as I see that you are as well.
Well, I've actually gone video on this one. You've gone for still shot, and why not?
Oh,
Just stay
God.
with that. That's perfectly okay. We
I
just
woke up 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, well, you see, that's always the way.
Yeah, no one needs to see this video. Your video right now, but yeah, I literally just woke up 5 minutes ago because now working from home, I literally just wake up and drag myself to the living room, so and I've been doing that now since was it March that I started?
Well, March 24th was when effectively the lockdown effectively took place in
Yeah.
this country. And I think at that stage, we just set up probably one of the last set up phone links with your good self, and you were having to self-isolate at the time
Yeah.
because
So,
obviously we didn't know where we were going.
yeah, I started working from home 10 days before a lot of my office because by the
You were
time,
always ahead of the game, Gabriella. I mean, this is the
yeah,
way forward, yeah.
by the time my isolation ended, everyone had gone working from home. So, that was great. I just had a bit of a cold around at the time, but I never got tested because back then,
There were
it
no
was
tests.
it, yeah, I think we had just started. It was super limited. You had to have the really particular, definitely got corona symptoms to get tested. And now they just test every single person. So you've got I know people who've had just very slight cold. They think it's probably not it, but they're getting tested within hours now. So it's really changed and progressed so much.
Well, I think certainly for the foreseeable future, our links will become more Zoomers, as I'm referring to them, as opposed to phoners, which is fine. And I think we'll continue working through that process. I mean, what we've been doing as far as the Midweek Drive is concerned, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, has been to record the programmes actually in a studio that we've used at the James Cook University Hospital up in Teesside. And then I've effectively transferred them down for later broadcasts. So, fingers crossed, this little piece will be the first of a compilation of Zoom-based
Oh.
interviews that we will be putting out probably on the second Thursday in July, which by my reckoning would mean Thursday the 8th of July. But don't take that. I mean, if you're listening to this live and suddenly you say, but it's the 7th of July. No, it might well be the 8th of July. You might well be listening to it as a standard podcast as well, which is obviously very sensible and makes perfect sense. But I'm going to actually go through a few sort of bits and pieces, Gabriella. I mean, first of all, the Gibraltar Chronicle, because it's well worth actually promoting the whole thing. We'll be doing a bit of research, and I'll just actually pull up my little details here. And it's got quite a history, really, hasn't it? The Gibraltar Chronicle, which
Yeah.
clearly has benefited in recent years from your own presence with respect to that whole side of things. We've got, for instance, the fact that it was born in direct relationship with the garrison of Gibraltar, and casualty lists and news were slow in the 18th century when five regiments from the garrison of Gibraltar were then promptly shipped to Egypt in 1801, and the news was posted on a notice board in the Gibraltar Garrison Library. Is there still a memento of that 1801 event there?
I haven't seen the first edition, but the Garrison
Oh.
Library still exists today, and they have an archive of every single paper that's been published. So when I often get sometimes get requests from people, they want to see an article from their great grandparents, and they ask me for maybe a 100-year-old paper. It's so much fun because I get to see these old editions. Stacked up, and they've been binded together, so they've been bound in books. So each year has, you'll have two books per year. So in the early 1900s, because the edition was about 4 pages instead of now what it's 20, they would bind it in books. So the first 6 months would be one big book, and now the second part of the year would be another. So it's great to see. The books are really old, and in some cases they're falling apart. And it's excellent to see what was news back then.
Yeah, at least you don't have to go through microfiche. Which, have you ever used microfiche?
I've never used that.
No, microfiche was a dreadful way of actually doing research. Let's do some of the testing things out here. It says, according to this wonderful search engine scenario, that it has a circulation of 5,000. Is that approximately right?
I think it's dropped a bit because of coronavirus. We had to drop.
Okay.
But it sounds about right.
And is the editor Brian Reyes?
Yeah.
That's all right. I was surprised at that because I thought it would be editor Gabriella Peralta. Never mind. But obviously happened in the next few years. Sorry, Brian. And headquarters, Watergate House, Gibraltar?
Yep, that's where we are. Oh, we used to be right underneath the Garrison Library for many years. And about 10 or so years ago, we moved to Watergate House.
You could have actually quite literally been one of Garrison's guerrillas. Look it up on the internet. You'll find it was a classic American television series of the 1960s, Garrison's Guerrillas, all about World War II, Mission Impossible type team, basically. So there we are. A little bit of TV news and trivia for you. Other big question we need to ask, and I can tell people already saying, but what about Frodo? How is he? How's he coping? Do you think that as Zoom continues to develop, we might indeed not only have his Instagram account, but we might even actually see Frodo in person on one of these connections?
Yeah. He's been so good. The pandemic has been the best thing for him because he's had everyone at home. So that's been lovely for him. I think from everyone he...
Yeah, you just lost us there momentarily, Gabriella. Are you still there?
Okay,
we got from everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So from everyone, he's just thriving, is he?
Yeah, he's loving it. He's loving this pandemic. Doesn't want it over. He's got everyone at home with him.
Well, I think the news from Frodo, given that the United States fine folk led by Donald Trump seem to be buying up every one possible of the one drug that seems to be helping out against vaccine, then Frodo might have his wish, and WHO say the worst is still to come. So who knows? It's very much a case of we'll be working through that. And just very briefly, Gabriella, because we're talking to a number of folk from this perspective, as you might imagine, there are online book festivals, there are events that are online, we've had Glastonbury online. You were always pretty well connected, although I think is this your first official Zoom interview?
Yeah, this one's my first, yeah.
Well then, we're honoured and privileged to have actually sort of been part of that whole system. But do you intend, I mean, when you're doing news stories and you're reporting, will this be technology that you're using as a matter of course to actually stay in touch with people?
I've been using the phone. I've just been calling everyone
old
up.
Old school.
Using my phone. I have video chatted, but not on Zoom. So I've used like WhatsApp video, done that. But it's mainly just been normal telephone calls and meeting people. So I went to an award presentation last night. Mm-hmm. It was outdoors, a limited numbers, so it was okay because we can have now groups of 20 people. The rules are slightly different in Gibraltar than what they are in the UK.
It's because we have to bear in mind that I believe in the Isle of Man, we were doing a feature with Jessica Ward, another one of our fine journalism graduates of the University of Lincoln. They've lifted everything, basically. It's completely, you can hug everybody. It's all wonderful in the Isle of Man, at least for the moment. But who knows how long that'll last.
We've not got to the level. But we've got zero cases. And we have had zero cases for close to 2 weeks now. So that's been great.
The flip side, of course, is you're not accepting anybody who's coming in from Leicester, obviously. There we are, England.
No.
Okay. Couple of key things to actually just wrap up with at this particular case. Would you like to hazard a guess, bearing in mind, as I say, in terms of time zones and various other factors, at how the weather is going to be for Lincoln, England, from Gibraltar? Just talk us through what you think it's going to be. Cast your predictive lines on for the 9th of July. Is it 9th of July? Yes, the 9th of July. Thursday, 9th of July.
So I have to predict the weather 2 weeks in advance.
Well, a week and a bit, shall we say.
Okay. So you've had heat waves in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to last.
Yes.
So maybe in 2 weeks' time, you go down to 20 degrees or 19.
Splendid. That's what we needed. That's all we needed.
Which is all right weather, but it's not the same heat wave of 28.
No.
Doesn't it go in cycles? I don't know. Not a meteorologist.
We will find out. Upcoming in terms of this Zoom special series of interviews, we'll hopefully be speaking to Robin Pierce, who'll be reviewing some of the past output. We'll also have William Coles back with us and probably another feature as well. Gabriella Peralta, two final questions for your good self before I actually switch the recording off, because we've got to keep some semblance of normality around, although I hate the phrase the new normal. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoom link with us today?
I have, thank you. And next time I'll wake up earlier and I'll put my video on.
honestly, it's probably a nasty shock seeing myself. I know the camera's frozen with me now, so what the heck. So the key thing is, you've already said it there, next time, will you be back with us again? I don't know, similar time, maybe next week?
Yeah.
Broken Dreams, The Late Greats, The Crooked Beat, three awesome titles for three awesome novels featuring Joe Garrity and written by the awesome Nick Quantrill. Nick, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Alex. How are you?
You're great. I mean, you know, when last we spoke, I think it's fair to say that no one was quite expecting this manifestation to occur a year or so later. But what the hey, you know, it's good to see you in a virtual sense and connecting on that basis, and obviously proving that it's never dull in Hull.
Exactly. I mean, I think as writers, it's almost been fortuitous having a lockdown, because it's been a chance to focus on some writing for a couple of months. Once we managed to get on top of homeschooling and everybody being in the house and so on. But generally speaking, as writers, I think we're quite used to working in solitude and not having the world around us for a long period of time. So it's been interesting and not without value, I think, for me as a writer.
Yeah, that is quite fascinating, because I've had writers who've said that they were used to a different kind of working and they prefer to work outside in cafes. Well, don't do that for a wee while. and obviously folk like yourself who kind of get more focused on the whole thing. But either way, as long as we can look forward to more Joe Garrity stuff, that's all we can look forward to. So that's good news. Wanted to move that out of the way. One of the reasons we're delighted to speak with you today, of course, is you will be taking part in the online Newark Book Festival, literally 10th, 11th, 12th of July. Talk to us about that, because I think, is this the second year you've been involved with Newark?
It's been a few actually now.
Yeah.
I'm really kind of really sort of pleased that Sarah trusts me to program a crime panel for each year. So Sarah gives me the theme of the festival, which this time is Through the Ages, and she lets me get on with it. So I'm bringing three brilliant crime authors who write about different periods of time to Newark, or in a virtual sense this year, obviously, because of the way the festival has gone, to talk about their work. And we're going to discuss about writing, say, crime in different periods, as in which era might be easiest to commit crimes in, and the detection of crime, and how technology has changed the nature of crime and police work and so on. So it's going to be a really interesting discussion, I think, and something we might all maybe learn a little bit from as well, possibly.
Yeah, one of the things that immediately sprung to mind recently on one of our stations, we have a book of the month, and it was the very first Inspector Maigret novel by Georges Simenon, written back in 1930. And one of the comments was made that you kind of, looking at it from a 21st century perspective, just see how much has actually changed in terms of just police surveillance mechanisms, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that's one of the interesting things for the authors is, does your detective get to use technology, or do they not get to use technology, depending on when they're writing? One of the guests, Mick Finley, writes in Victorian London. So, you know, obviously, kind of the technology available there is very different, and it's all very much sort of psychologically based and that type of thing for the Victorians. It kind of brings challenges, I think, for authors, but it may well be that Rod Reynolds, one of the other guests, who writes a very sharp contemporary London novel, that the prevalence of technology and CCTV and so on makes it much more difficult for criminals. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where the differences are, I think, and as a writer, which is easier to do.
Blood Red City, of course, is Rod Reynolds' line there. A witness but no victim is a line from that. Crime but no crime scene. Francis Brodie is also going to be part of the panel, and Mick Finlay. So you got, together with yourself, a real fantastic foursome there, Nick.
Yeah, we're really happy. I mean, Frances Wright, novels set in the 1920s, so she's kind of almost straddling the periods, really, where it's the past, but there is kind of footage of it available, I guess, in a way that is not there for the Victorian era. So, yeah, I think what I like about Frances's work is that she writes about a private investigator, but it's a female private investigator, Kate Shackleton. So she's kind of playing with the genre of crime writing there, because if you think of the 1920s and 30s crime writing, and it's very much male PIs, the likes of Raymond Chandler and so on, creating Milo. Mm. So I like the way Frances is playing with the tropes there and reversing it and making it a female perspective, which opens up lots of interesting questions as well about society as well and how it functioned in those days. So yeah, we've got a really varied panel, I think.
Sure. I hadn't realised she actually put up 12 Kate Shackleton mysteries, The Body on the Train being the 12th of those from that point of view. And obviously, Mick Fleetwood, that would be an interesting line from that point of view.
I love what we're going to say.
Exactly. He might pop over. Who knows? He might drop. He might sort of make a virtual appearance. But Mick Finlay, author of the Arrowood historical crime fiction, again set in London, Arrowood and the Thames Corpses, third in that series from that point of view. The wonderful sort of notion of once you found a character as a detective, I mean, and again, just returning to Nick Quantrill, what a fun line. Of course, returning to yourself and the Joe Garrity sort of series. Do you feel that you get to know the characters more? Do you feel actually more comfortable with them after that first novel where you start introducing us to Joe as the protagonist, etc.? Gradually, you become more and more a part of their lives and vice versa.
Yeah, you do. It's a weird thing because obviously they're fictional characters and they don't actually live, but they feel like they do live in your head as a writer. And it's the fact that you kind of create a supporting cast for them, really. So you know, straight away stories kind of almost come to you quite easily because you've got those people around them. So you know what the conflicts are and what drives them and what they like and what they don't like. So in some respects, a series character is quite easy to return to because it's like slipping into a comfortable pair of shoes, maybe. But then there's a lot of fun to create new characters as well, where you're kind of starting from a blank canvas. I think in terms of readers like going back to characters because it's that kind of soap opera quality in terms of you're kind of going back to an old friend and catching up with them year down the line. So yeah, I think series characters are always popular with writers and readers.
Mentioned at the top of the piece, Broken Dreams, of the late greats and the Crooked Beat. Can you share anything about Sound of the Sinners, of course, which is due out in the not too distant future?
Yeah, hopefully it's the fourth in the Joe Garrity series. The original plan was it'd be published in time ahead of the festival, but obviously with the coronavirus situation, it is the publishers struggling with distribution channels and just like everybody in every business, it's incredibly difficult to get things into the shops and so on. So we're probably going to be more like an autumn release, I think, now. But yeah, it's been fun because I've not written about Joe for a couple of years. So I've had to kind of imagine where he's been for that time and what brings him back to Hull and what that pull is for him. So,
well, presumably to see the relegation battle against Middlesbrough in the next few days. That'll be one thing, surely.
I can't even talk about football at the moment. Hull City is such an awful, awful situation. But yeah, I mean, the great thing about the Joe books for me is that the first one I wrote was when Hull was on the brink of becoming a city of culture. At the time, I think it was actually crammed the UK crap town. And the books have followed all the way through to the city of culture and beyond now. So there's such a brilliant backdrop to write about in that sense.
No, it works well. And any plans to kind of move away, or have you actually mapped out a whole, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 novels featuring Joe Garrity? Where will you be sort of taking the Nick Quantrill muse in future?
Well, the novel I'm working on at the moment is actually a different character. I just wanted to write about something or somebody quite different to Joe. So it's kind of a young female protagonist who's a journalist, but she's kind of like a new media journalist. She's into podcasts and writing for sort of independent media.
Using Zoom, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. We're all Zoom veterans these days, aren't we? So,
yeah, where was that ice lolly from the 1960s that I used to like so much?
So I wanted to just do something a little bit different and somebody, a character I could take outside of Hull as well, I thought. So I dare say I will go back and write more Joe books because I didn't think I'd write any more after the third one. That kind of trilogy felt quite done, but I've started again with the fourth one. So yeah, I need to keep writing Joe stories as well at the same time.
Joe will not let you lie. He will not let you lie. Let's wrap up by reminding people that actually, as far as the New York Book Festival is concerned, the event is online. It's £2.50, but I mean, 250 English pennies. That's all. 250, just there.
It's a bargain, isn't it? It's a bargain.
Unbelievable. And if you're a friend of the festival, it's completely free. It's between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. And as we heard from Sarah in the interview a few days ago, clearly bear in mind, it's not going to be sort of there forever. It's online. You need to be there and experience it because it will be live and we'll work on that premise. And you can go and find out details at newyorkbookfestival.org.uk to find out details about that. Nick, obviously, you'll be hosting Mick Finley, Francis Brody, Rod Reynolds in this wonderful thing, Crime Through the Ages. Awesome. Nick, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self.
I feel
as though, who knows? First of all, completely just via phone. Next time, sort of in video, Zoom sounding things. Maybe sometime in the near future, we might actually meet face to face.
We'll have to teleport to each other or something.
Whoa, exactly. Now, clearly, whether it's a case of leaving lockdown or whether it's a case of, in the matter of Leicester, still being in lockdown, there are lots of impacts in terms of society and in terms of how things work through the process as well. And many people in the more mature generation, the experienced, the enhanced folk, etc., do tend to become lost, forgotten, etc. Nearly 3/4 of people, actually, over 55, say that they've actually struggled with lockdown. Now, to talk us through some of the challenges with respect to that and also how things are being developed as well, we're delighted to welcome from Santander UK, Sue Willis. How are you, Sue?
I'm really good. Nice to meet you, Alex.
Yes, exactly. In a virtual sense, as I say, we're now I know probably how those politicians feel when they have to do, or when they were doing the daily briefings and you get sort of messages coming through on that basis. But talk us through this particular survey, Sue, because it's really quite distressing in many ways when you look at some of the factors there that people drinking too much alcohol, only half of those over 55 have heard from their family and friends. Lots of real challenges from that point of view in terms of the older generation.
Alex, you're absolutely right. And the Santander research has highlighted that the older generation are really feeling a sense of friendless and forgotten, which is really sad and disappointing. You've mentioned some stats there, but there's a couple that really stood out to me, which is, you know, 55% of them have had less contact with their family and friends, and 2/3 of them are really struggling and finding it difficult, but even more, they're finding it hard to then tell other people how difficult they're finding it. So taking to different measures to cope. And what we're trying to do at Santander is just play our part, really, by asking all our branch, all our colleagues across the bank to really join some of the great initiatives that Age UK and Alzheimer's have on offer and volunteer their time to do anything from calls to grocery deliveries to leaflets. So that's what we're really encouraging people. And Alex, I'm really pleased to say we've got over 1,000 colleagues who've signed up already, which means for every one of them, we've donated £1,000 to Age UK and Alzheimer's.
This is fantastic news, Sue, and even more fantastic news from the Alzheimer's Society. We've been joined online now by the wonderful Helen Foster. How are you, Helen?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Now, we've just been hearing from Sue there about some of the real challenges that the older generation, the over 55s, have been struggling with from that point of view. Clearly, from your own position within the Alzheimer's Society, the sort of initiatives that Santander are actually bringing to the table are really vital to the whole experience, really.
Oh, absolutely. We are incredibly grateful to Santander for supporting the Alzheimer's Society, as I know that Age UK are too. The money is incredible and has helped us to continue a lot of our services, albeit virtually at the moment. But almost more importantly is their fantastic contribution through their people who have made the lives of people living with dementia and their carers so, so much easier to bear during this dreadful lockdown period.
And of course, one of the key things that people talk about is the easing of lockdown, where we go from that point of view. I mean, it's rather like throwing a big stone into a pond. You've got lots of ripples and lots of resonations that come through that. Presumably, this is something which people will be coming to terms with for a couple of years. Who knows how long, really?
Yes, absolutely. And actually, people with dementia are the worst hit by this ongoing pandemic. So dementia is the most common pre-existing condition for everyone who has had the virus, and it accounts for a quarter of the deaths. So all the people who tragically have died through coronavirus, a quarter of those actually had dementia. And then on top of that, we have a huge spike in unexplained deaths of people with dementia that haven't died from the virus itself. But we suspect some of the factors that have contributed to their earlier death have been things like isolation, loneliness, the increase of their condition because they aren't able to get out and about, their cognitive decline, if you like. And a lot of people we just hear from their carers have just given up, you know, and forgotten things far more quickly than they would have done without lockdown. So we're going to see the effects of this for a long, long time, particularly with people affected by dementia.
Technology can obviously help. Without technology, we wouldn't be able to actually do this particular piece at present. And curiously enough, just as I say, technology should actually be able to help. Sue is hopefully back with us, which is great. Sue, we're talking about some of the things you mentioned earlier. The Santander Foundation donating £1,000 to Age UK and the Alzheimer's Society for every employee who takes part in this and other volunteering initiatives. That's up to £1 million. Now, so far, the great news is over 900 colleagues have signed up. That must make you very pleased and proud of the Santander team, really.
Oh, immensely proud. And, you know, personally, I've been really privileged to hear some of the stories from some of the colleagues, and we're sharing them inside the bank, and they're really heartwarming. And I know Helen would know these better than me, but I was talking to a colleague last week that had made one of the companion calls to someone living with dementia, and he'd been talking to this guy, and the old guy had said he was a rally driver in his youth, and this our branch colleague was really big into motorsports, and I think they've made a friendship for life. And it's really heartwarming when you hear those stories. So we're trying to do everything we can to encourage even more employees to sign up, because it's so worthwhile.
And Helen, returning to yourself for the moment, from the perspective of good therapy and actually helping and assisting with that, that human contact, it's really an immeasurable benefit, isn't it?
It is. And we know from experience and from feedback from people, even prior to the virus, at the point that someone gets a diagnosis of dementia, often over the next few months, their family and their friends kind of almost, I don't know, move away from them emotionally. People don't know how to talk to people living with dementia sometimes. They don't know what to say. We hear tales of people being avoided, you know, people crossing the street to avoid them. And that's prior to lockdown. So with the additional restrictions around lockdown, then there's been zero, you know, human contact for a lot of people living with dementia. And that's just almost impossible to bear. And it's understandable why people's cognitive abilities do diminish. If you're not chatting away to your family and friends every day, you will lose that ability to speak. And we've heard heartbreaking tales from carers who have not been able to visit their loved ones in care homes for understandable reasons, who say when they have been able to go back, they've forgotten their name, they've forgotten who they are. And that's heartbreaking for everyone.
Well, as we said, hopefully the sort of things that we're doing now, which I'm sure if you talked about having interviews over the airways, over computers 20, 30 years ago, people would have said, you must be demented or insane, but let's step away from that. Where can people go to find out further information? Let's take Helen first in terms of the Alzheimer's Society initially.
Sure. Well, people must reach out if they feel they want support. We are here for every single person affected by dementia. And so we have our Dementia Connect support line, which is 0333 150 3456. We have a great online forum called Talk and Point that people can get access to from our website, which is simply alzheimers.org.uk. And on that website, there are many, many pages devoted to coronavirus. So things like how to explain lockdown to people living with dementia, right through to how to use diversionary tactics for carers, how to sing at home, and things like that. So there's lots and lots of information, and reach out, we're here for everybody.
Fantastic. And Sue, in terms of people wishing to get involved with Santander UK initiative, where would you point them?
Well, same as Helen, just reach out. So contact the bank either at santander.co.uk. We have a great page called the Coronavirus Tips. Please use that for anything you need. You can use chat. You can contact us in the branch, pop in. The branches are open 10 till 3 and many are open on a Saturday. Or ring us on our phone number 0800 9123 123. We're here to help. We're trying to do our bit to support.
Fantastic. Helen Foster and Sue Willis, many thanks indeed. And ladies, congratulations. We made it through this three-way interview with the technology and it worked. Well done.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Midweek Drive, this time via Zoom, producing all manner of magical things. And clearly when it comes to, again, regular people who, you know, you get questions such as, why haven't we heard from? What's happening with, etc.? Well, the only one we can definitely say is a guaranteed yes, he's always 100% good value and is a quality writer and basically Edinburgh's finest English correspondent you could ever wish to meet. It's William Coles. How are you, William?
I'm very cheery, thank you. I've washed my hair specially for you. I have shaved. I am looking as good as I can possibly look.
Well, I mean, I know, look, the bottom line is these will be audio-only files. So although I know it's nice to actually see you in person, and the last time we actually saw each other in person, of course, I was actually in Edinburgh. I indeed have also shaved. Don't worry about the hair. I gave up a long time ago with respect to that. So why bother? But in terms of where we are, we spoke to you, obviously, when we resumed our audio packages from another studio up in Teesside, so James Cook University Hospital at Southside Broadcasting. How has it been over the last few weeks? Is it getting better? Is it a case of people are saying, yes, well, Scotland are sorting things through? Is there the uncertainty? I mean, this sort of time slot, I've just been watching actually the Prime Minister's Question Time. I know it's a time slot, etc. And the big thing is obviously what's happening in Hong Kong. What's life like for the Coles household? Is it still fun?
Yes, it is fun. We have, obviously, Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister here, has to do whatever England does, she has to do something different. So she is already talking about going into quarantine. If you go to this hellish place called England for a holiday, you need to go into quarantine when you get back to Scotland. So there's that. But our chief occupation here, that we have discovered a new hobby, and that is going into derelict houses. And there are quite a number of them in Scotland, and we generally bike out there in our filthiest clothes, and we wriggle under the fences, and we get into derelict houses, and some of them are pretty spooky.
You see, back in the day, wasn't that squatting?
Well, I'm not going to live in them.
Well, I just thought it might be a case of we want to colonise. It's a case of the Coles family start, the Coles colonisers. It could be a whole new theme from that point of view. I mean, on a serious note, of course, one of the things that people are often saying, brownfield sites need to be revamped, etc. I mean, one of the things that struck me when I travelled up to Edinburgh in January, one of my possibly only forays out of the country, or indeed in the county, or indeed the town in 2020, was that... Like a lot of cities, there are areas which really could do with a lick of paint, and there are other areas which are really great, and other areas which you just think, oh dear, this is not good.
Yes, there are some bits which are fantastic in the city centre, but certainly in Edinburgh, there are quite a few bits which are pretty run down. And there are a number of quite old houses and hospitals which have just gone, and the roofs have often gone. One of the biggest ones we've been to is called Bangor Hospital, which is well over 200 acres, I reckon, maybe 300 acres. And it's got about 20 or 30 buildings on it. And it's all of them are empty. And you've got four or five security guards chasing people off. But at the weekends, hundreds of people are going to this hospital to check out all these ruined houses.
Now, I can almost hear a Welsh correspondent, Robin Pearce, shouting at the computer now, saying, but Bangor, surely it's in Wales. What is a hospital called Bangor doing in Scotland?
It's got a U in Bangor. It's B-A-N-G-O-U-R. But it's pronounced Bangor. He'd probably pronounce it slightly differently. I wouldn't do a... Welsh accent with
no,
that.
No, not in these politically well-thought days. Just stay away from that. But would people have had a lovely day the day they went to Bangor?
Yes, you better tee that song up.
We've had enough fun actually getting audio connections going. If you want music as well, that's a whole new line. There'll be a batch of sort of interviews putting together. On a slightly different note, we're promoting quite heavily an online book festival, the New York Book Festival, which is taking place, apart from one event only, a week on Saturday, so it's the 11th, 12th and 13th, solely online. Have you participated yourself in any online festivals as yet? And if not, obviously the invitations will be flooding through the door or the ether even as I speak.
I've taken part in one within Sweden, of all places. But yeah, I'm bang up for all these things. Yeah. Of course.
Exactly. I mean, the ease with which you got online today is superb. You got there in the end. It's a little panicky, I must admit. I thought, it's unusual. He's normally spot on. Is he out and about, etc.? But we got there. I noticed that there was news that the Scottish BAFTAs are going ahead. That's quite bold.
the Scottish Nationalists, their main agenda is whatever England does, they will do differently. So if you cancel the English BAFTAs, then they've got to the go Scottish ahead ones the have, Scottish have to go and vice versa. So that's it. They whatever England does, they will find some other way to do it.
So we're seeing, obviously, Boris Johnson and, for a moment, I said Theresa May there. That's another question for another time. But Boris Johnson and Nicola Sturgeon as being the equivalent to Tweedledee and Tweedledum, perhaps, contrary-wise. Yes. Yes. Yeah, and speaking of Theresa May, which I wasn't going to, but I am now, she got quite furious this week in terms of looking quite irate at the response that was actually given about the ending of one civil servant's career and the possible appointing of somebody else.
She's got a lot of history with Michael Gove. They hate each other and they go back a long way. And if she sees any chance at all to stick it in the knife, she'll have a go. Though, I don't know if it did her much good, but anyway.
Well, the reason I mentioned it, Bill, the reason I mentioned it was what struck me at that moment in time was, this is it, the sequel to Dave Cameron's School Days. Surely, Michael and Theresa, back in the day. It's got to be done.
Possibly.
It's tension between the two of them.
Isn't it amazing that Theresa is the only PM since really Ted Heath that's decided to stay on as an MP? You'd have thought she goes off, does her speeches for £100,000 a pop and retires to a life of luxury. But no, she wants to sweat it out still in the House of Commons.
Socially distanced, of course. Socially distanced, yes. Which is very important. Bill, it has been fantastic connecting with your good self. A reminder, of course, people can access your own details on the website and online. And your website is?
wcoles.com.
Exactly. And any thoughts in terms of adventures you're looking to 2021? Any sort of things you're looking to share with us at this moment in time? Is it a case of no, survival is the main option at this stage and continuing homeschooling with the boys?
One of the boys has thankfully left school, so there's only one left.
How's it been going? Has yourself and Morag been successfully educating him?
Yeah, it's been terrific. He's a self-starter. But the great thing about Scotland is that we have right to roam here and you can camp where you like. So I think the future of our summer holidays is going to be walking with tents and we can camp wherever we please. That's more tricky in England. So that's what we're planning on.
Well, I'm just thinking, make sure you've got a Wi-Fi area. We can actually do a connection with you in the field, so to speak. You know, there's just no end to the fun we could actually have. But for the moment, you know the two questions. You know them well enough by now. You've criticised them. You've critiqued them. You've said, for goodness sake, ask something different, like what's the square root of pi? You know, work on those premises, but I'm still sticking with them. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoom link on the programme today?
I've loved it. Thank you so much for asking.
And the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future? And who knows, if we can, we might get a couple of other folks to actually sort of interject as well. Will you return?
Yes, ask me any time. Thank you.
Well, who'd have thought it? We have moved on in telecommunications history, long past Alexander Graham Bell and into the line where literally a square screen, it could almost be in one of the USS Enterprise's lounges connecting together, or indeed, back in the day, Hiram Hackenbacher talking to his watch, talking to his watch. Poor guy. Never mind. We're video connected. It's Robin Pierce. Welcome.
We are video connected in living colour. I mean, this kind of reminds me of the old Thunderbirds, you know, video phones. Except they're a lot slimmer. That is the 21st century.
But it's getting together. And the exciting thing is that this very morning, as if actually in honour of the thing coming through, what actually arrived through my letterbox, but... Yay!
A burst.
Yes, as I revealed last week, I did actually subscribe to it, and lo and behold, very impressed. Within days of me pressing the buttons, it comes winging through my letterbox. A perfect edition with one slight concern. Delighted to see Kieran Moore doing some wonderful stuff in there. Obviously, our mutual friend Ed Fortune, my choice. Lead writer, Robin Pierce. I'm looking. Oh, I thought this was the 60th anniversary of the Flintstones.
That would have been more Steve's area of expertise than mine. I don't have anything in that one. And actually, that's the first one that I've had nothing in for about 14 or 15 issues.
And our responses immediately get you on a video link to actually sort of say, what's going on? It's like the Chinese situation.
Explain yourself. Exactly. I have contributed quite heavily to a feature in the upcoming issue that which is on your hands.
Yeah, now I believe, according to that podcast, which is obviously hosted by Mike aka Jordan and so on, that the next edition of Starbuster, or is it 473, is supposed to be a complete revamp, a complete relaunch, or is that just a case of I don't know.
Nobody's told me.
Right, okay, well, listen to the Starbuster.
That issue that you've got and the incoming one that you've got next month, these have been put together remotely.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Nobody's at the offices. It's all been edited, put together. I mean, as you know, it's no real secret. It's all written off-site anyway by freelancers like myself in strange little rooms.
And
like
Paul Mount. Let's not forget Paul Mount, who of course has at least got one midweek drive appearance. Who knows, he might join us on one of these before too long. Kieran Moore, we mentioned Ed Fortune. Ed's always great. Yeah. Actually, slight bone to pick with Ed. I mean, I we really shouldn't do this on the whole sort of thing, but it was just a minor thing. I thought, you know, once again, he chooses the podcast of the month. There's no mention for either Piercing the Veil or indeed Stone Tapes or indeed Midweek Drive. It's Retrek, Four Trekkies, one podcast destiny. Again, the pod pick of the month by Robin Pierce. I think, by Ed Fortune. I'm thinking.
Well, I think that if Piercing the Veil was given any kind of that plaudit, I think I would be mortified.
Anyway, so let's move on, Robin, because there are a few other things that I want to actually talk about. Would you like to share with us, given that this will be the line in which you will have just followed the return of Gabriella Peralta? I know, it's exciting. And probably William Coles as well, but it's a chance for you to actually give us your review of a past recent Podbean edition of the Midweek Drive.
I can do better than that. I can do better than that because yesterday I spent the entire afternoon listening to 3 full hours.
Oh, my goodness.
There was an American sequence, then there was part one, then there was part two. How dedicated can you be?
Very impressive. I like to feel like all artists, we managed to actually sort of, you know, work and produce some good quality material. Let's hope the positives outweigh the negatives. Over to you.
Okay, I unfortunately listened to them out of order because I went for the lowest one first, thinking that's got to be the oldest, but no. Uh-huh. So I listened to the American sequence first, and notes were taken.
Wow. Of course. Just for the benefit of the listener, there are genuine notes there. It's not indeed a figment of people's imaginations. We have a genuine journalist's notes here and critics' views.
Okay, I listened first of all to Ribita, not Ribita.
she was a very individual. Exactly, yes.
She sang a song called I Believe. You kept bringing up the Bachelors. I mean, really.
For every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. I believe.
The one that keeps coming to my mind is it Bachelor Boy?
Cliff Richard.
Oh, was that Cliff Richard? Okay.
Yeah, Cliff Richard with Bachelor Boy, and of course, he still is.
Let's not go there. I loved the song that she sang, called I Believe, which took you back to the Bachelors. I love the delivery, that there's something that, and it's a genuine concern, that I have never understood. And it goes both with Riveter, where she speaks with quite a pronounced accent. But when she sings, the accent goes. And it reminds me of you know...
Geordies.
Yes.
I mean, doesn't sound like a Geordie
accent.
Exactly.
Or if you'll get these people working the, you know, working men's clubs and...
Cilla Black.
Singing, country music, and all of a sudden they've got this deep South accent. Or, you know, how come Ozzy Osbourne suddenly becomes coherent when he's singing? You know, it's just a question. Then I heard Alina Flart. I was interested in her not being able to get back to the USA due to the lockdown. She was up in Scotland as an exchange student, and it's something that I actually hadn't considered because, you know, I live in the country, you know, didn't go anywhere. But somebody actually being stranded abroad, I mean, that must have been so distressing. And it was interesting hearing an on-the-ground report of how the USA is responding to what appears to be a second wave.
Now, buying up as much medicine from the rest of the world as possible, obviously.
Yeah.
Everything.
But most of the news, you know, it's skewed one way or the other. But it was nice to hear it from, if you like, a woman there on the street telling us what she sees and hears. Okay, then you played some Texas. And you mentioned that they were Scottish.
Charlene Spiteri is Scottish.
I never knew that.
Oh, yes.
I have their CD.
Charlene Spiteri has got probably one of the most pronounced Scottish accents ever, except when she sings.
Back to my point. Okay. Great to hear from Abigail LeMay. But then it kind of fell apart a little bit, and it was nothing to do with Abigail, who was absolutely perfect. I blame you.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you play Boney M?
Felt in the Boney M mood in so many ways. I could have gone Mar Baker. Could have gone Mar Baker. Could have gone Ra Ra Rasputin.
Oh, no.
Rivers of Babylon.
It's one of my most hated acts of all time.
But they mimed so well.
I think that's why I hate them so much. I didn't like them back in 1978.
Come on, Robin. A cross between Alice Cooper and Boney M. You're going to go for the Boney people, aren't you, surely?
You may well chuckle there, knowing that you're safe. There you are. One day, you're going to pay dearly for that. Jessica Burtis, happy 21st birthday on July the 10th. After that, I listened to what I thought was part one, but actually was part two. I liked Tallulah Randall's song, Radiating Love, the Chernobyl mix. See what I did there? I'd like to wish Jonathan Lindsley good luck with his artistic enterprise. Jessica Ward, of course, another familiar voice. But George Mann. Oh, how I've missed talking to George on the Stone Tapes, or anywhere else, indeed. My old Stone Tapes colleague. Interested that he's been recording for the online convention, called San Diego Comic Con, with Lucasfilm. That's something I do envy him for. It's interesting that so many of the conventions are now going actually online and streaming. Of course, the San Diego Comic Con always have. But we did Sci-Fi Weekender. We produced the evening's entertainment online, of course. But they're already starting to monetize this. There's a convention offering a 2-minute online one-on-one chat with William Shatner. 2 minutes for a bargain price of $400. Is there anybody who's worth $400 for 2 minutes of their time?
Obviously, Sam Stone, possibly. Maybe David J. Howe. Apart from that, can't really think of many. If we add... Oh, maybe me and Robbie. I would just have you more in the sort of 500 mark, really. Alternatively, the other line would be the DC Expanded Universe Super August Convention, completely free of charge and access all areas.
Yeah. That's what I'll be doing in August. Okay, then I'll listen to part one, which I thought was part two, and you started off with the bubbles. Now, I could have sworn blind, but I defer to you. I thought that Video Killed the Radio Star was the only thing they ever did.
Oh, no.
I should sign up for one of your classes. I could learn so much. Sorry, Hannah Brown. Like you, I have yet to watch Artemis Fowl. Then you talked about La La Land and The Devil Wears Prada, and I haven't seen either of those either.
It's Rosemary's Baby this week.
Sorry? Yes, Rosemary's Baby. I've seen. And it's got one of the most chilling lines ever in a horror film. What did you do with his eyes? Ooh. So, Jameson, good luck with that new job. You will be brilliant, as you are in all things. Poppy Booth, congratulations on her success, as if it was ever in any doubt. Now I know a qualified philosopher, and we all need one of those in our lives. Conspiracy theories. Yeah, we all have one. I have plenty. Some of them are crazy. Tessa Snap, Walls and Ceilings. I'm going to give her 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Tune of the week.
It could well be.
It was more, well, as the kids say, and, you know, I'm down with a kid.
Of course.
Shizzle my bizzle, homie, and all this. That was more my vibe. Would you care to know who the contributor of the week is?
I think so, before I hopefully reveal some more, as Phil Leonis would say, production stuff discussed on air like a DVD extra. Anyway, the contributor of the week is...
Riveter. I love that song, and I love the contribution.
Excellent. Well, there we are. Well, I tell you what, we might try and get Riveter on so he can actually speak in person, because we're not that exciting. You choose the contributor of the week, and it could be as the winning scenario, a bit like having a two-minute session with William Shatner. You get the chance to actually speak to them one-on-one. We could look at that.
I'm going to pay $400.
Oh, no, I don't think. I think we'll step away from that. Let's move into
the next. Take it out of my wage.
You may have seen that I actually entitled this little talk Resonance Rewind or various other things. And I was thinking, I was inspired, Robin, by the New York Book Festival, which goes online in a week and a bit's time. And I was thinking to myself, look, you have a considerable genre knowledge. You have a wide-ranging area of the field from that point of view. Why not actually consider a number of artifacts, movies, or one-off TV shows, or various other things, and look to actually see if we can share our thoughts with them from a contemporary perspective over a 15-minute period? In other words, how they've resonated through time. I'm thinking about things like they may have been deeply criticized at the time, like Spock's Brain episode of Star Trek, for instance, an episode of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. The first one I actually had in mind as a possible review to actually consider about Resonance in Time was this, actually, In Time by Andrew Niccol.
Never seen it.
Well, we could just actually, in a sense, shoot the metaphorical breeze as we're doing now, over a piece, which again, we'd keep to 15 to 20 minutes maximum, and it would be a case of reflecting on something which you may have seen, you may not have seen, we may have encountered it. It is actually available totally free via the Amazon Prime site at present.
Okay.
So you can actually see in time. And Andrew Niccol, of course, had some interesting background because he was responsible for The Truman Show and Gattaca. So interesting.
Really?
He was, yes. You see, once again, sharing some of those things. We could take an episode of Thunderbirds. We could take a pilot episode of Stingray. We could do, and I'm thinking just a range of things, accentuating the positive, because I don't want to go down into the depths of various other things, but actually just looking at that. So I put that to you to consider, sir. I've just thrown it out there as a possible way in which we could have a Pierce-Leftuke joint vodcast, or indeed podcast, or one of the ways with respect to that via The Magic. Or you could simply say, is this just Leftuke's desperate attempt to get yet another podcast into consideration for Ed Fortune's Podcast Pick of the Week in Starburst magazine? I don't know.
This is the first I've heard of this idea.
Exactly. That's why.
May I respond with two words?
Mm-hmm.
Considered. Approved.
Whoa.
Count me in.
Do you know, for a moment, I felt as though I was Gerry Anderson and you were Lou Grade. You know, I thought all you need is a cigar. You know, that's basically it. You know, or I could have been Patrick McGoohan in a past life and you were Lou Grade. You know, and it was a case
now
of...
There we are, yeah.
Exactly.
So I thought you were Lou Grade, I was Tony Curtis, you wanted to persuade us.
Well, exactly. Which, of course, would have gone for a second season had it not been for Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible, yeah.
And on that bombshell, as I hold up one of my little treats today, the Green Hornet.
Ooh.
And Batman 66. See the magical visual things.
Is it a follow-up to a piece of the action / Batman satisfaction?
Exactly, yes. With Colonel Stamp. Colonel Stamp, played, of course, by the man who went on to play Harry Mudd. And Roger C. Carmel, and also Colonel Mikhail Ivanovich Toptygin in the episode of Hawaii 5-0 entitled The 92nd War. Something else we might consider. There we are.
Yeah.
I think before
my visual treat for the day.
Oh, yeah. The Monster Show, A Cultural History, which is there, which you should be obviously writing for.
David J. Scarl. I'm writing a lot about the Universal monsters for my website, which I will be publishing in the run-up to Halloween this year. I'm covering 31 of the old classic films.
And on that bombshell, apart from saying that you can obviously access Robin Pierce's views and thoughts exclusively on Piercing the Veil, the podcast, and other sort of exciting things, and your website is...
to be returning.
Of course, you know, working through the process. As we're not going to Leicester, well, why would we these days? So we'll step away from that. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic and video-like link with us via Zoom today, Robin Pierce?
I've really enjoyed it, yes.
So the next critical question
more like this, please.
We'll be on for that. We will sort that things through. And I shall now basically say happy trails and on to the next exciting contributor.